The book of Revelation tells us about a system that's going to exist in the last days called Babylon. It's called Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations on the earth. Probably one of the best expressions of Babylonianism is the corporation. But what is a corporation? Let Jerry Spence tell us, leading trial lawyer, in his book entitled With Justice for None. He says, a corporation is a fiction that relieves man of his responsibility to his neighbor. It permits him to do in the name of the corporation what he would not do in his own name. It shields him from his human conscience. Like any mechanism, the corporation mindlessly obeys the commands of those who manipulate it and thereby commits some of the greatest crimes ever visited upon the human race. Yet a corporation has an independent life. Like the machine, possesses certain features of immortality. It can survive those who have created it. It can, like a runaway train, smash all and any who stand in its way. It consumes the energies of its workers like coal shoveled into a boiler. If it wrecks, many will be injured and many will be destroyed. The corporation is an immensely powerful machine, ordered, legalistic, rational, yet utterly out of human control, wholly and perfectly indifferent to any human value. Now, when I'm talking about the corporation, I'm not talking about the little family operation. I'm talking about the big power brokers. I'm talking about the big multinationals. I'm talking about the corporations who virtually control this world by their surrogates, the politicians. I'm talking about big business. So the corporation, as I stated, Babylonianism can be expressed in terms of the corporation, the corporate society as we know it. So we noticed here, first of all, that the corporation bears no responsibility to his neighbor. It permits him to do things in the name of the corporation that he would not do in his own name. What a contrast to the teaching of Jesus. Notice what Jesus said here in Mark, the 12th chapter. In Mark 12, verse 28, one of the scribes came, and having heard them reasoning together and perceiving that he had answered them well, asked him, "Which is the first commandment of all?" And Jesus answered him, "The first of all the commandments is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is like." So Jesus equated the two of them almost as equal. And he said, "The second is like, namely this, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none greater, that is, there is none other commandment greater than these." And the scribe said to him, "Well, Master, thou hast said the truth, for there is one God, and there is none other but he, and to love him with all the heart, and with all the understanding, and with all the soul, and with all the strength, and to love his neighbor as himself is more than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices." So the fundamental, most important, and basic teaching of Jesus Christ, aside from loving God with all of our hearts and our minds, is to love our neighbors as ourselves. Can a corporation do this? When a corporation has no responsibility to his neighbor, and a corporation belonging to a corporation or an officer, a CEO or whatever in a corporation permits him to do in the name of the corporation what he would not think of doing in his own name. Notice Proverbs, the 15th chapter. Proverbs, the 15th chapter, verse number 27. "He that is greedy of gain troubles his own house." Has the house of Israel been troubled today by those who are greedy of gain? We have all been hearing about the big corporate takeovers, the ruthlessness, and the losses that millions have received or received at the hands of the few, and the financial condition and the industrial condition of the United States today based upon what great and greedy corporations have done. He that is greedy of gain troubles his own house. If this nation hasn't been troubled by what has taken place by the big corporations, whether they be financial or industrial or whatever, we don't even understand remotely what's going on. Isaiah 5, verse number 8. Woe unto them that join house to house, that lay field to field, till there be no place that they may be placed alone in the midst of the earth. Does that not talk about the power of the great corporations? It isn't little small individuals who are doing these things, except perhaps some individual who may have become very rich in his own right as a result of corporate power of one type or another. But we have people today who are in this very process, buying up property, buying up fields, buying up land, so there's nothing for the little man to buy. You can go to certain areas of this country today. I can remember several years ago, down in the San Francisco area, my sister-in-law had a house down there, and I mean, it was a house you wouldn't have paid $5,000 for in 1960. It had a single garage, it had a living room, kind of a living room kitchen combination. It had two little bedrooms and a little kitchen. I don't know what she paid for that house, but she turned around a few years later and sold it for $112,000. That's how valuable land and property is in areas where there are heavy population groups. And when wealthy people can come in and purchase large masses and large blocks of land, as they're doing in Vancouver, Canada now, with the result of the Chinese fleeing Hong Kong, so that the Canadians themselves are even being forced out of their homes and properties because wealthy and rich people can come in and purchase those things, something's wrong. Now, maybe not all of those individuals that are coming in purchasing properties in Canada are corporations, but corporations have certainly been guilty of this. Who has the power? What little man has the power and the resources to fight a corporation? Woe to them that join house to house, that lay field to field, till there be no place, that they may be placed alone in the midst of the earth. Micah 2. Micah 2, verses 1 and 2. Woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. Oh, they sit around in their board meetings. They meditate when they're home at night. Then they sit around in their board meetings and decide what they're going to do. They don't care who's hurt. They only think about one thing. Well, two things, perhaps. They think about themselves and their own security, and then they think about their stockholders. They don't care how many people are destroyed in the process of carrying out their nefarious schemes and plans. Woe to them that devise iniquity and work evil upon their beds. When the morning is light, they practice it because it is in the power of their hand. Some executive can sit up there and sign a paper, and I mean, 10,000 people are out of work the next day. X thousands of people lose all their possessions and their holdings because of some move by some CEO. And they covet fields and take them by violence. That's right. If a man loses his property, he can't afford to pay the taxes anymore. The sheriff will come in with his crew. And if he doesn't get out, they'll drag him out. All in the name of law and legality. And houses, and they take them by violence, and houses, they take them away. So they oppress a man in his house, even a man in his heritage. How many people have lost their family homes and their possessions because of some corporation? Because of the power and the money that is behind these powerful forces that really control and rule this world. Proverbs 22, verse number 16. He that oppresses the poor to increase his riches. Brethren, the average, or brothers and sisters, let me say that the average American has about a 2-week lease on life. He probably doesn't own, you see people, they're driving around in their big fancy cars and they have all these nice things. Most of those things they are making payments on. They're about 2 weeks from bankruptcy. And if they lose their income, or if they lose their insurance or security in one way or another, they're out in the cold. We're living in a world today where about 20% of the population, even less, let's say probably 10% of the population in the United States own and control about 80% of its wealth. The rest is all divvied up among the rest of us. We're all essentially poor people. Now, if you tell that to a Nigerian or somebody else, they will hardly disagree. Because in a sense, wealth is interpreted in the eyes of the person who is beholding it. But it is true that in the society in which we live, the average American is about 2 weeks from bankruptcy. So we read here, "He that oppresses the poor to increase his riches, and he that gives to the rich," that is, he bribes his way into wealth, or he knows how to play the political ball to get what he wants in financial circles or industrial circles or whatever, "shall surely come to want." You remember what Jesus said to the rich man? He said, this poor beggar over here, he now is able to enjoy the fruits of a relationship with Abraham. But all the things that you enjoyed, you endured, you had during your life. Well, if we're talking about Babylonianism, and we're talking about a system the Bible describes as a harlot and the mother of abominations on the earth, then let us recognize what we read here in Revelation 18 and verse number 2. This is what God says. It says, we just read from Proverbs that those who take advantage of others to increase their riches will come to want. And so we read here in Revelation 18, verse 2, "He cried with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and is become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and the cage of every unclean and hateful bird." That's what's destined to happen to Babylonianism. Why? Because Babylonianism has no responsibility to his neighbor. It permits him to do things in the name of the corporation that he would not do in his own name. Now, secondly, the corporation is completely indifferent to any human value. And in the process, it shields those who regulate it and run it from his human conscience. Somehow or other, he seems to think that he is detached from the corporation, and what the corporation does, he is not guilty of. Notice Romans 1. This is a good description of human nature here. And in a sense, when you're talking about Babylonianism and when you're talking about corporations, you're talking about human nature. And what does God say about human nature? Romans 1, verse number 31. Here God is giving a description of what humanity, the practices of humanity from the very beginning. And what does it say here? Without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable and unmerciful. Does that describe a modern day corporation? I should say so. Ephesians 4, verse number 17. Here Paul is writing concerning the conduct of these Gentiles. They never had a revelation from God, so they didn't know the difference between right and wrong. And in not knowing the difference between right and wrong, this was their conduct. Having the understanding darkened, Ephesians 4, verse 18, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness of their heart, who, being past feelings, have given themselves over into lasciviousness to work all uncleanness with greediness. Does Babylonianism have its origin in God's revelation? Well, if it does not have its origin in God's revelation, what is its source? The devil and human nature. And this is a description right here of what Babylonianism is all about. 1 Timothy 4, verse number 2. We read of a condition that's going to exist in the last days. While the text here may have a specific view or a specific viewpoint in mind, it certainly is broad enough to include the corporation, because we read here that the Spirit speaks expressly in the latter times that some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of demons. And I want to emphasize verse number 2 here. Speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron. Can people actually reach the point in their lives where their consciences are seared with a hot iron? You think a corporation can have its conscience seared with a hot iron? You bet it can. And this is what we find today. We find people who are hard-hearted and their consciences are seared and they have no concern and interest in others. 2 Timothy 3, verse number 3. Without natural affection. One of the characteristics of the last days in which we live, the times in which Paul said would be perilous. This know also that in the last days perilous times shall come. Are we living in perilous times today? We're sitting here, maybe we're not so much, but there are many people who are sitting right now quivering, wondering what the stock market's going to do. They don't know whether they're going to lose all of their investments and all of their savings before the day's over. Many already have. We're living in perilous times. Why? Because, as we read here in verse 3, without natural affection. Truce breakers, which actually in the Greek means implacable. Men who are implacable, without any feeling. False accusers, incontinent, that is, they have no self-control, and they're fierce. This is a time period in which we're living today. This is a business climate. We all hear about competition, don't we? What is competition? Competition is what I just read to you. So this is what big business is all about. And this is the corporate life. Climbing up the corporate ladder. Jeremiah 6, verse number 15. Were they ashamed when they committed abominations? These people who are involved in looting and depriving the others of their rights or their fair share or their property. You know, communists have had a valid point in criticizing capitalism. The only problem is that when they criticize capitalism, what they're really criticizing is monopoly capitalism. Because we haven't really known capitalism in this country since probably the 1800s. Once the Rothschild money came into this country and financed the big robber barons who took control of this country, then capitalism on a big scale was turned over to the hand of the monopolists. And communists criticized that. You know why we can never have a system of a fair, equitable distribution of wealth? I'll tell you why we can never have it. We can never have it until we accept God's Jubilee year. That's why the Jubilee year was given. It was given to prevent the massive accumulation of wealth, so that after every 50th year, property went back to its original owners, and those who had amassed it in that time had to give it up, and the monopoly came to an end after 50 years. What a marvelous system of equity God originated, even in economics. Do you think this world would stop for one moment and consider the observance of the Jubilee year so wealth could be equally distributed once again? I'll tell you when it'll happen, over their dead bodies. And that won't be until Christ returns. So as Jeremiah said here, were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? Nay, they were not at all ashamed, neither could they blush. They have hardened themselves to such an extent that looting and taking from other people in the name of the corporation, shielding them from their own consciences, being completely indifferent to any human value, has made them hardened. And it is a way of life. And it does represent Babylonianism. Now, the corporation smashes all that stands in its way. I suppose if we knew the tales of heartbreak and sorrow of the little men throughout the last 200 years in the history of our government who have been smashed and ruined and destroyed by corporations, it would fill quite a book. You see, we don't hear about most of those things. We don't hear about these events because the little man doesn't have an audience. He doesn't have the way and means to fight it, and he certainly doesn't have the publicity. The big corporations have all the publicity they need, and they make it appear good in there to their advantage. Once in a while, you'll find somebody who will stand up and fight him and get a little publicity in himself in his own right, but by and large, that doesn't happen. The corporation smashes all that stands in its way. And true to its paternity, to Babylon, hence its origin, as we read in Isaiah 14, Isaiah 14 and verse number 4, thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon. Babylonianism has its origin in Babylon. So this proverb against the king of Babylon, and say, how has the oppressor ceased? Babylon and Babylonianism oppresses. Its manifestation in the form of a corporation oppresses. Anyone who has worked for a corporation will be very much aware of this fact that's happening in our days today. It's like George Lehman said when he got out of Alcoa. He was given the opportunity to leave, and the byword was TMR. Take the money and run. They give you a settlement, and they gave you an offer, take it and run while you can get it. Because what is happening in many, many corporations today is that men will be in those corporations for 30 years, they get up close to retirement, and then they'll can them so they can't get their retirement, or it'll be greatly reduced. Or they will get rid of old-timers because they've risen to a salary level that's reasonably good, and they can get rid of them 5 years short of their tenure and hire somebody else to take their place at a third or a quarter of the price. You think there's security in a corporation? I can tell you, I got news for you. There's only one place you've got security, and that's there. That's up above. That's at God's throne. So as we read here, how has the oppressor ceased? Babylonianism oppresses. Jeremiah 50, verse number 23. How is the hammer of the whole earth cut asunder and broken? We're talking about Babylon. We're talking about Babylonianism. We're talking about a power the Bible describes is going to rise in the last days that will control the whole earth. It'll only last in a union for 3.5 years. And the only reason it'll last for 3.5 years is because it's mingled with iron and clay, and they don't mix very well. You cannot anneal clay to iron. So its foundation is shaky. But these people have already divided the world up into 10 sections. They have plans that are going on right now that are very, very active behind the scenes we're not even aware of. How is the hammer of the whole earth cut asunder and broken? How has Babylon become a desolation among the nations? That's what God is going to bring it to, but it is the hammer of the whole earth. Because it is the large corporations that virtually rule and control this earth. And let me tell you something else. We wouldn't have this drug problem from Colombia if somebody didn't want it that way. We have politicians that stand up and they make a lot of noise and falter all about fighting the drugs, and I mean, it isn't any better now than it was 15 years ago, is it? That ought to tell you something. When you have the bank and the International Monetary Fund and these big bankers that will go down to South America, to Guyana, for example, when Guyana wanted a loan, and they tell them, oh yes, you can have a loan, all right, but we want a cash crop in return, and that cash crop should be poppy seeds. And then you wonder why we can't stop drugs? Babylonianism smashes all that stands in its way. So, as we read here in Jeremiah 51, verse number 20, thou art my battle axe. God has used this Babylonian system virtually to take control of the world. It hasn't quite reached it yet, but it's moving quite rapidly in that direction. Every single week or every single month, you can read a new item of news that constantly points out that direction. For example, did you hear the one recently that it is now being authorized that the FBI can go to any country in the world now and pick up criminals? Truly a global aspect, isn't it? How do you expect to have a one world government unless these powers are granted? Thou art my battle axe and weapon of war. For with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and with thee will I destroy kingdoms. Look at Colombia now, in South America. Look at this condition that many of these banana republics are in. Maybe we should even take a look at ourselves to realize how controlled we really are. Isaiah 47. Verse number 6, I was wroth with my people. You know, the heart and core of Babylonianism today is in the United States, possibly in conjunction with England and the big moneyed powers of Europe. I was wroth with my people. I have polluted mine inheritance and given them into thine hand. Thou didst show them no mercy. Upon the ancient hast thou very heavily laid thy yoke. Notice the arrogance and pride behind Babylonianism. Verse 10. For thou hast trusted in thy wickedness, thou hast said, none seeth me. There's no conscience. There's no feeling concerning one's fellow man. There's a smashing of all that stands in the way. Thou hast said, none seeth me. Thy wisdom and thy knowledge, it has perverted thee. And thou hast said in thine heart, I am and none else beside me. You know, when it comes to wealth, I'll tell you what happens. Wealth reaches a point where wealth itself has no meaning, except for one thing. It grants more power. So the more wealth means the more power. There's only so many good things you can buy. There's only so many high quality things you can stand. You can only make your house so rich. But that accumulation, that massive accumulation of wealth, does grant power. And Babylonianism can be expressed in incredible financial power. And as it says here, it feels that it alone has the authority and right and rule in all things. Revelation 18. Verse number 6, this is what God says to her. Reward her even as she rewarded you. And double unto her double, according to all her works. In the cup which she had filled, she has filled to her double. Notice what she has indulged in. Notice what she controls here. The merchandise of gold and silver, verse 12. and precious stones and pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and thyme wood and all manner of vessels of ivory, all manner of vessels of most precious wood and of brass and of iron and marble and cinnamon and odors, ointments, frankincense, wine, oil, fine flour, wheat, beasts, sheep, horses, chariots, slaves, and the souls of men. Don't think this system doesn't control this world. As Professor Quigley said, the noose is already around the throat and it's getting tighter. And it is essentially useless, he said, for the average American to try to fight it because it's already too late. He said that in the 1960s. Babylonianism and the corporations smash all that stand in the way. Now, there's something else about a corporation we want to emphasize here. If it wrecks, many are injured and destroyed. Now, you can take a religious body and you can shape it into the form of a corporation, can't you? And you can build a hierarchical structure in it, can't you? And then what happens when all the people who trusted in that organization and in that corporation and that hierarchical structure are shattered and destroyed and traumatized when it collapses at the top? You know, corporations can take any number of forms, whether we're talking about business corporations, industrial corporations, or religious corporations. When it wrecks, what happens? Many are injured and destroyed. I think we all know the feeling well, don't we? Isaiah 47, verses 8 through 11. Notice the arrogance now and pride of this system. It's so arrogant and proud that it believes that whatever it decides to do, it will be done. You say in your heart, I am and none else beside me. I shall not sit as a widow, neither shall I know the loss of children. But what happens when it's going to collapse? But these two things shall come to thee in a moment, in one day, the loss of children and widowhood. What's going to happen to all the people who put their trust and confidence in that system? They're shattered and destroyed. And that's what's going to happen economically to all of these people who put their trust and confidence in modern-day Babylon or in its philosophy. Notice Revelation 18, beginning in verse 8, therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine. She shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. What's going to happen to all the people who were a part of her, who participated in her? The kings of the earth who have committed fornication and lived deliciously with her shall bewail her and lament for her when they shall see the smoke of her burning, standing afar off for the fear of her torment, saying, alas, alas, that great city Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. Oh, the cries are going to go to the heavens then. To merchants, notice verse 15, of these things which were made rich by her shall stand afar off for the fear of her torment, weeping and wailing. Do you believe that they're going to recognize the evil of that system as long as they're profiting from it? As long as it grants them security, are they going to repudiate it? Of course not. But when it comes tumbling down, as we read in verse 18, they cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like unto this great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city, wherein all were made rich, in all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness, for in 1 hour she is made desolate. Yes, when she collapses, many are injured or destroyed. Isaiah 13, Isaiah 13, beginning in verse number 17. Here's what God says is going to happen to it. I will stir up the Medes against them which shall not regard silver, they're not going to have any affinity toward the riches and costliness of this system. And they will disregard the gold. They shall not delight in it. And their bows also shall dash the young men to pieces, and they shall have no pity on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes shall not spare. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the excellency of the Chaldees, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, as shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. When Humpty Dumpty comes falling down, no one will put him back together again. And many will be injured and destroyed in the process. Those who are tied up with it and fail to recognize what the system really is, and I may include in that even those who are wrapped up in it directly or indirectly, religiously. I think you all know that we have demonstrated that our former affiliation has at least 30 links to Babylonianism. No wonder God says, "Come out of her, my people." Jeremiah 50, verses 11 and 12. "Because you are glad, because you rejoiced, O ye destroyers of my heritage." Look at the heritage that God has granted his people here in this country. Look at the fantastic wealth and abundance that was in this Western Hemisphere. Now look who controls it and owns most of it today. You know, when our early forefathers came over to this country, they left Europe because they were locked into a feudal system that deprived them from any share of the wealth. Where big landed property owners owned everything, and it was even a death sentence for someone to go out and kill a deer or an elk on one of those property owners' land. You know, if you're familiar at all with the French Revolution, one of the first things that was changed when the French revolutionists overthrew the establishment at that time, they made land public so anybody could go out and hunt on anybody's land. Yes, these greedy people who have gotten control of God's heritage have looted it and taken it for themselves and deprived the vast numbers of population from having but just a little handful. "Because you are glad, because you rejoiced, O ye destroyers of mine heritage, because you're grown fat as a heifer at grass and bellow as bulls, your mother shall be sore confounded." Yes, the virgin daughter of Babylon, the mother of this system, shall be sore confounded. "She that bare you shall be ashamed. Behold, the hindermost of the nations shall be a wilderness, a dry land, and a desert. Because of the wrath of the Lord, it shall not be inhabited." What a price is going to be paid by people in those days. Now, one other thing we might add. In a sense, a corporation is immortal because it can survive those who created it. Can we think of a religious corporation that we're all familiar that is in this category? It has survived those who created it. And this is true of financial corporations, industrial corporations, and whatnot. They have a sort of a sense of immortality to them. Well, shouldn't that be perfectly logical when we understand that so does Babylon? Notice Daniel, the second chapter. We read here of a great system called Babylon. And we read here of this image. This king saw this great image, and this image was all joined together. It was one image. And it started out with the king of Babylon. And the head's image was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, and his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and clay. And this system is going to exist, it says. From the time it first came upon the earth, it's going to exist till you saw that a stone was cut out without hands which smote the image upon his feet. So this Babylonian system is going to continue until Christ returns. Verse 37 says, "O king, you are a king of kings." Verse 38, "You are this head of gold." So this system continues right on down. Now, we haven't always recognized it, have we? It manifested itself in the Babylonian Empire. It manifested itself in the Persian Empire. It manifested itself in the Greco-Macedonian Empire with its four divisions. And it manifested itself in the Roman Empire. And it's manifesting itself today. Right on down. It's sort of immortal. In fact, as we read here in Revelation 17, notice the statement here in verse number 5. It's called Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations on the earth. So it's the same system described back in the book of Daniel. And what do we read in verse 8? This is how this system is described. The beast that thou sawest was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit. Strange expression, isn't it? It was, and yet it is, and it shall be. It's almost immortal, isn't it? It just seems to continue on and on in its various manifestations. One of its manifestations may be destroyed, and another one will yet appear. Yes, as we read in verse 10, these are seven kings, five are fallen, and one is, and another is yet to come. And the beast that was, notice it in verse 11, the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth and is of the seven and goeth into perdition. Strange expressions, aren't they? It's describing a sort of a seeming immortality that just goes on and on. Daniel, the seventh chapter, verse number 17. Here we find it described as four great beasts. The same system described as four great beasts. And these are four kings. And they're going to rise out of the earth. But notice who's going to take over these four beasts. The saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. So here are these four beasts continuing right on down until Christ returns. Notice it in verse 21. I beheld the same horn made war with the saints. So here's this system, antagonistic and against the saints of God. You know why it's against the saints of God? Because the saints of God abhor that system. They see it for what it really is. A heartless power broker who has no concern and consideration for one's fellow man. And so this fourth kingdom, as we read in verse 23, shall be the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom. And it describes here various incidents that these powers are going to do. And then we read here in verse 26, but the judgment shall sit and they shall take away his dominion. Who's going to take it away? The kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heavens shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. That might be why this system hates the saints. The saints are going to take it over. And when the saints take it over, I'll guarantee you it's going to be changed. Now, do you think people willingly give up their wealth and power? You know, if I didn't know what Bible prophecy was telling us, I would be literally astounded and dumbfounded as what is happening over in Eastern Europe today. But I'm not, because I know what prophecy says. You cannot have a world government, brethren, under communism. You go back and read what we said in the Gnostic Connection back in 1978, 1979, 1980, and we told you there that this system would have to ameliorate to the place where it would become compatible with monopoly capitalism. So this system is existing right up to the time of the end. It's sort of immortal in its own right. And as it is described here in Isaiah 47, verse number 1, it's described as a virgin daughter. Not the original Babylon, but now this is a daughter who came out of her. Come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon. Sit on the ground. There is no throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans. And yet the system we read about in Revelation 17 is called what? Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations on the earth. It's a woman, all right, but it came out of the original one. It's likened unto the virgin daughter. It just seems to repeat itself over and over again. It has a sort of a sense of immortality. It can survive those who created it. And then lastly, it utterly consumes the energies of its workers. One of the great crimes of corporations. We hear about Andrew Carnegie. And in his later life, I guess his conscience got to bothering him, so he decided he'd better take this massive wealth and start giving it out in forms of various trusts and donations of one type or another. It may have placated his conscience, but if you think back of the kind of wages he paid his workers and the conditions that those people worked under, I don't think it's going to do much for Andrew Carnegie in the judgment day. He paid his workers a pittance. All of these big moguls of corporations are nothing but greedy graspers. Well, they should be, because that's what Babylonianism is all about, isn't it? Notice what God says in James, the 5th chapter. James 5, verse 1, "Go to now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you." I'm not talking necessarily about millionaires at all here. I'm talking about billionaires. I'm talking about people who have so much money they don't even know what they have. I'm talking about people who don't care how they use that money. How many people are harmed and damaged as a result of the misuse of it and the abuse of it? "Go to now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and rust are cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, Andrew Carnegie, and the likes of you." "And shall eat your flesh as it was fire. You have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which of you is kept back by fraud?" This is what they have done to their workers and their laborers, these wealthy people. Many of them, not all of them, of course. There are wealthy people, I'm quite sure, that are conscientious and decent, good people. I'm not talking about them. I'm not talking about small corporations who haven't reached this level. I'm talking about the big power moguls and the people who control this earth, the ones that God says are Babylon. "The hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which of you is kept back by fraud, cries. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth." God has taken note. You can be sure of that. There is a judgment day coming. Every man will stand before God and he will bear his own burden. "You have lived in pleasure on the earth and have been wanton. You have nourished your hearts as in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and killed the just, and he does not resist you." What can he do? Can he fight a corporation? Corporations, when they become involved in litigation, will just virtually wear the poor man down. It's like Jerry Spence says in his book that I quoted, "With Justice for None." He said there's justice in America, all right, but this is a key phrase you should keep in mind. Little justice for little people. Means if you're a little person and you don't have much money, you're not going to get much justice. You got justice in this land if you're rich and you can afford these big high-powered lawyers. And that's the only way you get it, except by the grace of God. "Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord." That's what God says. They've taken it, all right, so what? Be patient. Behold, a husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and have long patience for it, until he have received the early and the latter rain. Be ye also patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. Yes, Babylonianism is going to be held accountable. And the people who are behind Babylonianism are the great men of the earth. Just as we read here in Revelation 18. Notice it. Verse number 23. The light of the candle shall shine no more at all in thee. And the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee. For thy merchants were the great men of the earth. For by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. The great men of the earth are the ones who are a part of this system, who are ruling it and running it. Jeremiah 22, verse number 13. Woe unto him that builds his house by unrighteousness. Woe to him that builds his corporation by unrighteousness. And do you suppose that any great corporation could be built without unrighteousness? I doubt it. And his chambers by wrong, that uses his neighbor's services without service without wages, and gives him not for his work. Do you read about the practice of some of these big multinational corporations in South America and what they do to the laborer down there? I mean, you will be sick. Corporations who give no, for a number of years, who have, which have given no concern whatsoever to the dangers of the working conditions. Where men have died by probably the thousands and maybe even millions because of unhealthy working conditions. All in the name of profit. Leviticus 19. Here's what God, this is what the saints are going to judge the world by. These are the laws that are going to be brought to bear against Babylon. Leviticus 19, verse number 13. You shall not defraud thy neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with thee all night until the morning. Notice Deuteronomy 27. Deuteronomy 27. Cursed be he that confirms not all the words of this law to do them. We heard about those curses the other day, didn't we? God says the very people who are ruling and controlling this world, if they do not abide by this law, they will be cursed. Cursed. Cursed be he that confirms not all the words of this law to do them. There's going to be a price and a penalty paid, brethren. You can be sure of that. Exodus 20, verse number 8. Notice a law that is laughed at almost in all circles in this world today. This law was given really in one sense to protect the worker. That's one of the reasons of this law. And what does this law say? Exodus 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. What do corporations care about the Sabbath day? Oh, they keep their day all right, you know. Well, they do it because custom dictates it, but that's not God's Sabbath day. The Bible does not say, thou shalt keep a seventh day or a Sabbath day. It says you shall keep the seventh day. The seventh day is the Sabbath. What do corporations care about the Sabbath day? Isaiah 5, verse number 23. Woe to them, as it says here, it gives a series of woes, and then in verse 23 it says, which justify the wicked for reward, and take away the righteousness of the righteous for him. They set aside his claim. They ignore him and they disregard him. Yes, Babylonianism utterly consumes the energies of its workers. It uses them up. And when they no longer can be of purpose, or when they get old, they just toss them aside like an old dirty shirt. That's the work of the corporation. That's the works of Babylon. Now let me reiterate, in bringing this to a close, I'm not talking about every corporation. I'm talking about those corporations that are guilty of these things. Those big, powerful, multinational and even national corporations who virtually rule and control the world through their surrogates of politicians. Those, the Bible says, have no responsibility toward their neighbor, as Jerry Spence summarized it, that permit those who run those organizations to do things in the name of the corporation that they would never think of doing in their own name. Those who are completely indifferent to any human value and who shield their consciences from it. Those big corporations that smash any and all who stand in their way. Those who destroy people who are caught up in it if the organization itself wrecks. And yet, in a sense, those organizations, this Babylonianism that seems to be immortal and just lives on and on, the corporation that thrives even after its originators die, those who utterly consume the energies of their workers. Brethren, those are the things that make up, brothers and sisters, those are the things that make up this world today. Those are the things we need to be aware of. Those are the things that are going to be corrected when the saints are sitting upon the throne of God during the millennium.